So George, the man I had been working with, gone fishing with, taken on the back of my motorbike, was a man from space. With all the happenings that night, my mind was in a whirl. I looked sidewise at George in the light of my flashlight as we were packing up our tackle. I thought to myself, he looks so utterly human, surely all this is not possible? It must be a dream, and yet I have seen. One thing is certain, that night on Patterson's groin in 1960, I shall remember as long as I live. Edwin was now sitting straight up in his chair, demonstrating remarkable energy, using his hands and arms to aid in his descriptions. His eyes were lively. From that night on, whenever I was alone with him, I called him by his real name, Voldar. He told me a lot about his home planet Calders and about the Confederation of Planets. By now, I was quite convinced that there was life in space and that our planet was not the only inhabited one in the universe. I had living proof in front of me, I had Voldar right there beside me. It was not a dream, it must be true. Voldar later told me that Weora had also spent 2 years here and that he now headed a committee of space people assigned to our planet Earth. Voldar said, if only you Earthlings knew how many visitors from space are among you, you would be very surprised. He said that nearly every country is visited by them. All these space visitors are volunteers, who are first thoroughly trained in the language and customs of the country they are to visit. When they are landed in some secluded spot, they are met by people who have also been prepared for their arrival. Then they live and move among us, sometimes for years. Obviously, they have to hide their true beliefs in extraterrestrials anyway. It is also made easy for them by the fact that they can make themselves identical to us. How do we know that their intentions are peaceful? Well, on more than one occasion Voldar stressed the fact that they come in peace. They have been around for thousands of years. Had they really had any aggressive intentions, they could have invaded our planet long ago. But hostile beings from space do exist and I have been warned about them on frequent occasions, but these beings are not from the Confederation of 12 Planets from where Weora and Voldar come. And so the time passed. The weeks ran into months and the months into years. During this time, Voldar exhausted every source of information available in libraries and museums in Urban. I took him to meetings, lectures and various churches. He was specially interested in our religions and we attended many church services, including some of the spiritualists' meetings. I don't think we missed any. I could never get Voldar to express an opinion on the various religions. He said it was not for him to criticize our different ways of worship. He did shake his head at brawls, fights, bad behavior, drunks and so on. And he told me sometimes about the religion of the Confederation. He stressed that he did not give such information with the idea of trying to introduce it to Earth. He did say that many of our ancient civilizations knew of their religion, which was taken to our planet by members of the Confederation approximately 70,000 years ago. They believe that there is one supreme being, usually referred to as the Divine One. This being is infinite and all-powerful and he creates all things, seen and unseen. Also created by him was his son. When man was created, the Divine One placed within the body of man a spirit or the soul which never dies, but continues on to eternity. The task of man's soul is to rule the material body by overcoming material desires. When this is accomplished, the soul will be called back to the great source and forever live in perfect joy and happiness. They also believe that all mankind is created by the same divine force, therefore all mankind are brothers and sisters. But this is a mere outline of their religion, there is much more. For example, their belief in reincarnation. Voldar said that their religion was practiced here on Earth, but through various reasons, as time went by, it was misused and misunderstood and we have today many forms of religion on this planet. In some religions we see the similarities, he said, but also vast differences compared with the Confederation. There was no divorce or separation of married couples in the Confederation. They have a system by which couples are ideally matched so that this never occurs. Yes, in the 2 years we were together, Voldar told me many things about life in the Confederation, but some weekends we used to spend our time just sunbathing along the beaches. I got to know him as a jovial, cheerful sort of person. He was always optimistic. His favorite saying was never to worry. He was kind and thoughtful. If you met him at a party or socially, you would find him to be the life of the party, cracking jokes and that sort of thing. He was also very strong physically. I remember how there was an occasion at a factory when a heavy machine had to be moved. It usually required 4 men to pick it up and shift it. Voldar must have wondered what all the fuss was about, as on this occasion he unobtrusively took the machine up by himself, and put it down where it was needed. Edwin then explained how he met Weora. I met Weora 3 times in all. The first was in Voldar's hotel room. The second time was when I was sick in the hospital with a collapsed lung. It was the St. Augustine's Hospital in Durban during November, 1966. Weora came into the ward to see me at about 9 o'clock in the morning, following the day I was admitted. I was in a semi-private ward with 4 beds, but I was the only patient there at the time. He spent about 20 minutes with me just talking. Strangely enough, I felt a rapid improvement after that. The last occasion was in 1973. I had received a message through my radio receiver to meet with him near Standia, which is about 70 kilometers north of Durban on the National Road N14. When I got there, Weora had already arrived. He was in a car with someone else in the driving seat, parked at the side of the road. I went there on my scooter. I got in the back of the car and we spoke for about an half hour. The main purpose for this discussion was to tell me about the coming of a cosmic event. An event, he said, which would involve our whole universe and might even prevent them from reaching us at all. We might be cut off entirely from the Confederation for a while. This event actually took place on June 26, 1976. How did I get the radio receiver? Well, before Voldar left at Easter 1962, he gave me this radio receiver. Actually, it is a tuner which is used with an amplifier. This was one of our standard models, at the factory, at the time. There is nothing special about it. Voldar had made it up himself, using standard components, and I am still using this same tuner receiver today. Soon after Voldar left, I regularly received radio transmissions from him and Weora. Later I recorded them on tape. To date, I think we must have received close on 1,000 such radio transmissions from the Confederation. But at first they were very weak, sometimes barely audible through the background noise, but they have improved with time and at present these radio contacts are of excellent quality. I have often been asked why others can't tune in and listen to these transmissions from them. It should be clearly understood that they are not the same as the ones from our own national broadcasting stations. Although I use an ordinary receiver and antenna, there is a fundamental difference. In this case, the antenna is not connected to the front end, RF stage, as it usually is, but to the power supply, rear end, of the receiver. Back to front, so to speak. As this receiver and tape recorder are transistorized, only 12 volts are needed to make it work. That's how they can start both receiver and tape recorder in my absence and leaving messages for me. I always leave a blank tape in the recorder with the record button down, but the power switch on off. Voldar had modified the radio antenna, so that the cold Asians could override the circuitry by remote control and then broadcast through this set. This set was confiscated by men who claimed they were authorities and never returned. To make a transmission, the spacecraft takes up a position directly above our house. They are approximately 520 kilometers above the ground, but are not visible to the naked eye. On some occasions, they come lower especially to show themselves to us, but for radio transmissions they remain at about that height. To communicate, they send down a narrow beam, like a beam of light, but of course it is invisible. I think that's how they energize the receiver, by beaming the power the transistors need, and this beam carries the message. The receiver does not need to be tuned to any particular frequency. I have added a switch to cut off the front end, RF stage, of the set. This is the reason no other receiver can pick up these transmissions, unless they know one's location and the antenna is connected to the final stage. Edwin returned to his reminiscences of Voldar. Then, after staying for about 2 years, Voldar said to me, "It's time for my return." It was a sad day indeed when I took him by car to Richard's Baby for Easter that year. He had two suitcases with him and the radio he had used that memorable night on Patterson's Groin. When we arrived there about noon, I made preparations to set up a tent at the camping site near the beach. Voldar said that he had to be at a spot near an outcrop of rocks on the beach at 10 o'clock that night. "It will be low tide and the beach will be wider," he said. He pointed out the spot to me and I was amazed how well he seemed to know the layout of that beach. I got the impression that he had been there before on more than one occasion. I spent the afternoon doing some fishing but my heart was not in it. Voldar noticed my despondency and while we were having a cup of tea, he said, to cheer me up, that we would meet again. He also told me that he would make frequent contact with me via the radio set. And so the last few hours passed all too quickly and the appointed time of his departure arrived. It was 10 o'clock. The beach was deserted. This stretch of coastline was often visited by holidaymakers but being before Easter, we were alone that night. Voldar had changed into a tight-fitting light blue suit. It looked to me like a tracksuit with a fastener down one side from top to bottom. He said it was a special material, giving protection from radiation in space. We each carried a suitcase and Voldar carried the radio set in the other hand. This receiver, the same one that he had used at Patterson's Groin, had been in operation intermittently all that afternoon and messages in Cold Asian had been coming through. I was unable to understand them. It is time to get ready now, Voldar said, and with that we made off in the direction of the outcrop of rocks. It was a beautiful night with hardly any wind. There was a clear sky with the stars above us and the tide out. Voldar's radio was operating again and we sat down in the sand and waited. About 10 minutes later we saw a white light coming towards us over the sea, which steadily grew as it came closer. Now I could see the shape clearly, like a disc with a dome on top. The dome had windows through which a bright light was shining. I spotted a figure at one of the windows. Before the craft drew too close, Voldar told me to stand back as far as possible as I was not wearing any protective clothing. So I moved back against the side of the dunes. But before we parted, we shook hands and Voldar's last few words were, "I will be away for quite a while but we will meet again." With that, I scrambled up against the side of the dune where I had a good view of the spacecraft as it touched down on the beach. As it came closer, I could see how enormous it was. It must have been close to 50 meters in diameter. This I checked later when I returned to the spot with a tape measure and measured the distance between some landmarks that I remembered. The craft was down on the beach. It began to elevate itself. I heard a low hum and then realized that a column was coming out from below, raising the craft up above it as it extended. Voldar had described exactly what I would see, and this column, he said, was hydraulically operated and that within it was a lift which could take one to various levels within the ship. When the column is drawn up inside, it served as a lift for the personnel aboard. I saw a large opening at the bottom of the column and I presumed there was a sliding door in it. Voldar picked up his two suitcases and his radio set and I saw him wave his arm in a final farewell and he was gone. The door closed and the column was drawn up into the craft which now settled down on the beach again. It was all over in about a minute.